Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 16, entitled Shadow Play. This episode aired February 20th, 1994. Before we start into Shadow Play, anything to say about the previous podcast?
No, it was perfect.
Well, we just recorded it yesterday, so it is fresh in my mind.
Yes.
Because we got a little jammed up due to various circumstances.
I have an additional conspiracy theory about Miles.
Okay.
Seeing as I'm on a roll with these things. Going back to the Rutledge, you remember he said that when he was on the planet, he fixed the transporter and they beamed up 13 guys. And
yes.
You said, what about the women? And you also said, maybe he got the tactical position because that became open. He beamed
right.
up 13 guys because the 14th person was actually the tactical officer and was a woman. And he left her behind, thus opening
Aww.
A spot on the Rutledge for a tactical officer, which he took. Miles
that
is
does not
very devious.
Seem like Miles. Oh, no. That's terrible.
That was his plan all along. Brilliant.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I don't think Miles is quite that devious. The one thing I wanted to say is we did, again, bring up this issue of people born in the late 60s playing children on the show.
Yes.
And we seem to add 60 plus 30 and got 90, which is right. But these folks were all born in the late 60s. So they were actually in their late 20s
at
the point when these episodes aired and not 30. But still, way too old to be playing 12-year-olds.
It's still a valid point.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that we can't do math when microphones are involved.
What do you mean when microphones are involved?
Well, yeah, I can never do math. That's why I went into engineering, so the computer would do the math.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in this episode, when I saw the title of Shadow Play and I saw the thumbnail image used on Hulu, I was a little worried we were in for another Rumpelstiltskin fiasco.
Oh, because of the little funny
hat. Fortunately, that was not the case. Yeah, the picture with the guy with the hat was like, oh no, what is that? All right, well, are you ready to start?
Well, before we start, fortunately, it is not a Rumpelstiltskin episode.
No Rumpelstiltskin involved in this episode. In the cold open, Dax is on her way to investigate an unusual particle field on the other side of the wormhole, and Odo is riding along, hoping to find clues to his origins. Which, okay, does he think it came from a particle field? I was so confused about that. They never really talked about it again in the episode. I don't understand why Odo went along.
Well, I assume it was just because he got a chance to go to the Alpha Quadrant with their science officer who was investigating
right.
an anomaly. So given that last time they went there, they found the obelisk and he got infected with that gas.
That's true. Maybe he just likes to go on missions through the wormhole, although he hasn't gone on all of them, but maybe he's usually busy being the security officer.
Yeah, he got an opportunity to go on this one to accompany Dax, and it could lead to him finding out where he came from.
And maybe he likes Dax. She's entertaining.
Yes.
She tells funny stories. And we do, by the way, have a silly conversation here between these two, as Dax is gossiping about people on the station, and Odo is listening intently. And he's trying to keep up with the story,
yeah.
but ultimately he says all she's doing is talking about the foolish humanoid preoccupation with romantic coupling, because clearly Dax likes a good soap opera.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I find it odd that Odo would be oblivious to these things. He's not interested in the relationship stuff, but he's very much interested in observing people. So I would have thought he would have been totally on top of what was going on, who was interested in who was dating, all that kind of thing. For the simple reason is, it's observing people, and he likes to do that.
Yes, but there is a certain nuance to this coupling thing that he is not understanding.
Hmm, okay.
Like, because she was saying, oh, the woman who runs the Jimja stand has been showing interest in Odo and by coming to the security office
yeah.
multiple times. And Odo's like, oh, no, she's just there because, I don't remember, it was her cousin or something, is interested in law enforcement.
Yeah.
It's like, no, dude, that's not what's happening. Dax also asks Odo if he's ever had a girlfriend, which Odo finds too personal of a question. And I don't know. I don't think I want to figure out how all that would work with Odo. That's too much detail for me. And Dax says something about, well, the impersonal questions are no fun after 9 lifetimes or 7 lifetimes or whatever she said.
That was funny. that was another bit of that goofy sort of Daxism. At least in this scene, we do find out that he still considers Kira a friend.
That is true.
So he's gotten over that she tricked him about a murder she committed 5 years ago? Was it 6 years ago?
I think it was five. Yes, that's very true. I will say these two are really good in this scene, despite the goofy material.
Yeah.
You can see them settling more into their characters, which usually I think happens in season two of a show.
Right, right. They start getting comfortable with how the character behaves. Usually
exactly.
The writing's settled down by that point.
Well, that remains to be seen.
Settling down.
When they arrive at the particle field, Dax says they are Omicron particles, and dramatic music starts to play, indicating this is somehow meaningful to science geeks everywhere. I didn't know what it meant, but she seemed nervous. Dax tells Odo these are very rare and can only be created by certain types of matter-antimatter reactions. She quickly finds the source of the particles is a small valley on a nearby planet. She isn't reading any life forms, but the particles are interfering with the sensors, so they immediately decide to just beam down and take a look. Did we not cover this last week?
Yeah.
That you should not both beam down.
Didn't they remember what just happened to Miles and Sisko?
Yeah, I mean, we were very upset about that last week. At least, or was that last week?
Yep.
Yeah, we were very upset about that last week. I mean, at least lock the door of the shuttle so somebody doesn't come in and then try to shoot it into the sun. Or tell the shuttle to beam you out immediately if you don't send a secret code in 10 minutes. I mean, do something. This,
exactly.
Just making the same mistake again.
Leave Odo behind, then have him come down later when it's safe.
That would be the easiest to do. Yeah. Well, down on the planet, it's dark and they find themselves in a classic Star Trek town square. How do all of these spacefaring races that we visit have tiny town squares and never big metropolitan cities?
It's because budget. It's easier on these set budget.
Yes, budget. They tiptoe in and look around, not seeing any people. The tricorder isn't telling them anything, but they find the source of the interference, which is a small structure in the center of the courtyard. Odo suggests they move quickly, but it doesn't matter. They find themselves at the wrong end of a phaser. An older gentleman in a mostly white flowing outfit and sort of a nightcap on his head, this is from the thumbnail on Hulu, is pointing a phaser at them. He's a bit goofy looking, so it doesn't feel really menacing exactly, but it is still a phaser.
Yeah.
And we cue the theme song.
Yeah, he doesn't do menacing very well.
No, he does not. Back on the station, it is also nighttime. Quark is sitting in the dark when the doorbell rings, and he seems to be expecting someone and is surprised to find that it's Kira at the door.
He's sitting in the dark, so it's definitely something nefarious. This is the cue on the show.
Always. This is when the freedom fighters or the terrorists or the soldiers of fortune knock on his door.
Yes.
But Kira has just dropped by to let him know that his cousin, Kono, tried to board the station, but now he's gone. Quark plays dumb when she tells him that his cousin is wanted for robbing a museum on Cardassia 5, which I have to say sounds very dangerous.
Yeah.
And he probably came here to have someone help him sell the merchandise. Outrageous, Quark says. Kira says, if you thought you were going to get away with anything while Odo was gone, think again. And then Quark says, it sounds like you don't like me. And she's like, don't like you. You collaborated with the Cardassians. You cheat your customers. You're a danger to the station. I despise you. Anyway, Quark says he's sorry he asked.
Yes, he should be.
But, okay, this is the right way to look at Quark, the way that she described him.
Yeah.
We tolerate his presence only for the purpose of the story, as far as I can tell. I contend that Quark does not belong here. The Federation is basically allowing this black market nonsense to carry on right under their noses because it's not a Federation official station or it's not Federation space. But your presence there as a member of the Federation, as a representative, means that you're supporting it. I don't like the politics of this.
And the same is true of the Bajorans. It's a Bajoran station and they're allowing it to happen.
I think if it were Kira's choice, it would not happen.
Oh, very much so.
So that's why I feel like it's Sisko allowing it to happen. And I don't like it. This, I don't think, would really happen. I don't mean it as a criticism of Sisko. I don't think this would happen. I think it's there for the story because we need this character. We think we need this horrible character.
You need this negative character.
Yeah.
But did you notice Kira's hair in this scene? 9.5 out of 10. You're the one who normally notices her hair when it...
I did not notice. I guess because it didn't seem different.
Yeah.
I noticed like when it's a little bit longer or when she has bangs, that's when I noticed, but it seemed similar. But yeah, I like her hair like this for sure.
Most excellent. And why, I would like to know, why would Quark's cousin want to do business with him over stolen goods? When we've already learned, like twice in the past now, Quark has sold out his partners in illegal activity.
He would totally sell him out.
Including that cousin of his that ended up in jail for however long that the Negus brought up because Quark sold him out.
Yep. I wonder if it was the same guy.
Oh, that would be funny. I did not go and look.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to think that anybody would do it. I think we're supposed to believe that the value Quark brings is all of his contacts.
Ah.
And that because he is now at the mouth of the wormhole, he can have contacts on both sides of the wormhole. But I believe that's what we're supposed to believe, is that he's got all these contacts,
yeah.
So he's a person to do deals with.
So the risk
and,
outweighs...
You know, he does sometimes carry out the deal.
That's true. So for his cousin's perspective, it's worth the risk.
I don't think it is, but... The Ferengi are not that smart.
But you know what the Ferengi are like, yes.
Yeah. Now we go to Sisko's quarters, and everyone is in their jammies having milk and cookies. And I'm not even kidding. They are literally having milk and cookies. Jake is bummed out that Sisko wants him to get a job, but he thinks maybe Nog can get him a job at Quark's, which Sisko is like, no, that's not what I mean.
That does not seem like a good idea.
That was funny. He wants him to work with Chief O'Brien and learn about engineering. He says it will look great on his application to Starfleet Academy. And Jake is like, ho-hum, okay.
So as you would say, sweet Jake is going to give it a try working with Miles.
Oh, I know. He's just so sweet. Back to Dax and Odo, who are now sitting at a table with this old dude still pointing his phaser at them. The guy who says he's the village protector has beads coming out of his hat and down the side of his head. This is a very low-rent costume, I have to say. Odo tries to prove that they are harmless by beaming himself to the shuttle, which makes the guy freak out a little bit and look around like, where did he go? And Dax says, don't worry, he'll be right back. And then yes, he indeed reappears. The guy says that's interesting that Odo would disappear because he's got 22 missing people who just disappeared. They started disappearing in the fall and the last one vanished just 6 hours ago. The protector finally believes Odo and Dax are harmless, and he puts away his phaser and he sits down.
He seems pretty deflated that they weren't the perpetrators.
Right, because he has no idea why people keep disappearing. But Odo is interested in the mystery, of course, and he offers to help.
Oh, yeah. Odo immediately goes into the Odo mysteries mode. He's interested. He wants to help.
Yes.
He just seems to naturally want to help solve a problem like that. It appeals
certainly
to
when
him.
It comes to finding something.
Yeah.
He's very interested in that. But... how can we just interfere with this society?
Oh, the Prime Directive?
Oh, Prime Directive. We only wheel it out when we need it. I mean, Odo can do what he wants, but Dax is there.
Yeah, well, there's no indication that this society has warp technology.
None.
You could argue that as they had this antimatter reactor and they appeared to be a colony on a planet that they hadn't naturally evolved from.
Right.
So... you could make the argument that they must have been dropped off there, maybe, and they had advanced technology. So even though you didn't see a ship immediately in the vicinity or there, they were warp capable or they knew there was a larger universe out there. It's a little bit hand wavy, I'll give you that.
Yes. Normally on TNG, we'd have to do a little reconnaissance before we just started talking to people. But yeah, we just start talking to guys.
Plus it's Dax, so the Curzon side is probably like, hey, let's just go down. They probably got a bar. We'll have a drink.
Do a little gambling.
Yeah.
Meet some women. Be great.
But yeah, I would agree with you of this is one of those story points of the Prime Directive matters until it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they cross the courtyard to talk to some other old guy in the same stupid cap. And it turns out...
you really don't like those caps, do you?
Stupid. It's like...
it's like they put on a toga and then stuck
no,
a cap on it,
well,
with some
yes,
beads.
It is like they put on a toga. But no, it just reminds me of, it was in Sanctuary with those people with, they've got rags tied to their heads.
Oh.
And somehow they have space travel. Oh my God. That when the costumes are stupid like this, that's what I think.
Yeah.
I'm just like, is this the future or is this not the future? Why do we have rags tied to our head? Or why are we wearing nightcaps with beads coming out of it? It's just so strange.
Toga.
So this second old guy turns out that it's his daughter who is the last person to go missing. He seems pretty resigned to the missing people being gone forever. Dax is scanning for transporter activity, but the particles are still interfering with her tricorder. So the protector gives her his scanner saying it works just fine. And she looks at it like it really tells her something, but you can see it's just like green, red, and yellow dots. There's nothing on there. Oh my God, I love it when they do that. It's so funny.
It looked like a Simon.
It did look like a mini Simon. Yeah. They had mini Simons, right?
Yeah, they did.
So these two old guys, by the way, are played by Kenneth Mars and Kenneth Toby. Pretty familiar faces from movies like Airplane and, would you believe, Young Frankenstein, one of your favorite movies.
Oh, yeah.
They each have over 200 IMDb credits, so they are quite prolific in their acting.
Yeah.
Dax and the protector guy head off to the missing woman's workroom to scan some more. And Odo and old guy number two head over to talk to the last person to see his missing daughter. And that was his granddaughter, Taya. Odo tries to talk to the granddaughter about her missing mother, but she's a little timid around Odo and doesn't help much. So Grandpa takes her home for the night.
Into the ad break.
Now we go to Ops, and Cisco hands Jake over to Miles as his new apprentice. And Cisco calls Jake Mr. Cisco and gives him a comm badge. It was so cute.
Cisco seems so proud of this. That Jake's getting involved. Yeah. He has this sort of little smile on his face when they close that scene. It's kind of funny. It seems very much the father passing the torch on to the next generation. And Cisco just seems so proud of that.
Absolutely. And the ever affable Miles puts the kid right to work.
Oh, yeah. Miles will be getting him to roll his sleeves up in no time.
Oh, man. That would be funny. They should give him a little uniform.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Wesley got a uniform.
Eventually. Then we go over to the promenade, and Kira is asking Bashir to keep an eye on Quark while Odo is away. Julian is very excited to be a spy because Garak has been lecturing him on surveillance techniques, which Kira finds quite amusing.
Oh, that was so funny. This is where Bashir can be so funny at times. He's so geared up to do this. And there's sort of a naivety about him, which doesn't fit with other aspects of the character.
Remember how terrible he was in the first episode where we see Garak, when they kind of ask him to just like keep an eye on Garak, and he just sort of falls apart.
Yeah.
Remember that? This is so much better, this version of Bashir.
Yeah, exactly.
So much more interesting. Yeah. But at the same time, this was a bit of a MacGuffin because we never see Julian again.
I'm wondering if something else was cut here for time. Maybe you see some more of the Bashir trying to spy on Quark or use Garak's techniques or whatever. And they cut that for time.
It's possible, because we do have a couple of stories going on already. We've got the B and the C story.
Well, that's actually kind of funny. I mean, you complained that we haven't seen B stories in the last few episodes, and now looks like we have an A, B, and a C story.
Perfect. That's what I like. Develop all the characters.
Yes.
Yes. Well, Cisco then calls Kira to say that Vedic Barile has arrived at the station. We haven't seen him in a while, not since the multi-part episodes at the beginning of the season.
Yes, his agent renegotiated the contract and he's back on the show.
Clearly. I'd practically forgotten all about this guy. But Kira is very happy to see him. He was invited to the station to speak, but he also came just to see her. So they go for a stroll on the promenade, and we see Quark watching them from a distance as he's obviously happy that she's distracted by something.
Well, it was funny because when she gets the message that he's arrived, like, on the station, she does this funny little smile just before she leaves. I thought that was a nice little touch because without any dialogue, they're sort of building to there is this strong friendship, maybe more than a friendship, just because of the way she smiled. I thought that
worked. I think she's remembering the naked prophecy.
Oh, yes. There was that too.
She was like, oh, yeah. Well, now it's morning down on the planet, and Odo tries talking to Taya again. The kid asks Odo what happened to his face. And he's a little shocked and says, nothing. This is a very kid question, though.
Yeah.
He tries to explain he's a shapeshifter and he's not good at faces. And the girl is confused because she says changelings are make-believe. Everybody knows that. And she tries to get him to prove that he's a shapeshifter. And he says, maybe later. Taya says she wishes she were a changeling because then everyone would like her. And Odo tells his sad story again about how a long time ago, people pretended to be his friend and would have him change into things. But none of them really cared about him. The girl astutely thinks they might have been scared of him. Maybe, Odo says. Then she asks if his parents were changelings, but Odo says he doesn't know his parents, but he's been looking for them for a long time. She tells him last time she saw her mother, she was making pottery. When she went to get her for lunch, she was gone. She had seemed happy at the time and nothing unusual was happening. And then he asks her if her mom has ever gone on a trip before, but the girl says they never leave the valley. Everything they need is right here.
Oh, no. They've been reading the Book of Elixis.
Oh, my gosh. They're a community.
Yeah.
Then she says her grandfather told her that her mother is never coming back. Uh-oh. Odo says he doesn't know, but he promises to do everything he can to find her and bring her back. And we go into an ad break.
Oh, this is cute, making a promise to the little girl.
It was a very sweet scene. I think he was very taken by her interest in him.
Yeah.
And how sweetly she was looking at his need of having a parent. And yeah, it was good. Back on the station, Miles is giving Jake a lesson in isolinear rods. Jake does not seem overly confident or interested in these little sticks.
Couldn't they put labels on them? He was telling them about the colors. I mean, I've got a labeler. Like, we could just put some labels on them saying
yellow means that.
Yeah.
And then what's funny to me is that Jake is like, oh, I'm never going to get this. And all we're talking about is the color of the sticks. Yeah. We're not even talking about anything complicated. So I'm not sure Jake is feeling it.
Yeah. Maybe it was a test. Miles was testing him. So if Jake said, couldn't we just put labels on them saying data, engineering.
Or a letter. E.
E.
And you could see it from a distance. Because it might be color-coded, so you could tell from a distance. Yeah. Yeah. Or if they're all like plugged into one of those little walls, you can't actually see the sides of them. You could only see the top.
Oh, okay. Good point.
Jake ultimately does tell Miles that he doesn't even want to go to Starfleet Academy.
Boom.
So Miles tells a story about his father wanting him to play the cello. I did not see this story coming.
No.
Yeah, and he wanted him to go to some musical academy.
Yeah.
But he signed up for Starfleet instead 2 days before he was supposed to go, and his dad was furious. But now his dad is very proud of him, and he tells Jake he needs to live his own life. But Jake is worried and doesn't want to disappoint his dad. Oh, Jake.
I did like how Miles says to him how, you know, your dad isn't a bad guy. I mean, Miles obviously knows Sisko well enough to make that statement and to try and encourage Jake to talk to his father. I mean, this was a great interaction between the two of Miles could really relate to this, having had that background himself. So he knows how to relate to Jake in this situation. I really enjoyed that scene. I thought it was well written and well performed.
Yes, I also like that scene, though I don't think Jake is worried about his dad's reaction.
Yeah.
You know, Miles is like, oh, he's a good guy. I think Jake thinks he's a good guy. He just doesn't want to disappoint him because he knows how proud he is. Like when he gave him the comm badge, like you said, he had that look on his face of how proud he was.
Yeah, and handing the torch to the next generation.
He just doesn't want to
make his dad sad. Gotcha.
But also, I believe that when you are a kid who watches a parent go through grieving their spouse, you are probably quite protective of the feelings of your parents.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay.
Now, Kira and Vedic Barayal are discussing a speech that he gave, I think in the chapel is where they came out of. And they start arguing about a prophecy because she completely disagrees with him. And it's all very flirtatious and cute.
I like how we see the very passionate Kira here. I mean, we see that very determined side of her where she's like, she passionately disagrees with his interpretation.
I actually would have quite liked for them to have that discussion.
Yeah.
I think that could have been interesting to hear because we don't, like, we know she's devout, but we don't really know what she believes.
Yeah.
We don't dig into that too much. I think they want to not be overly religious on the show and on most shows because they don't want to alienate an audience. But this is a made-up religion.
Oh, because people would start to interpret it and say, oh, they really mean this, don't they?
That's,
yeah.
I guess so. But I would love to hear any kind of philosophical conversation. It doesn't have to be about religion.
Yeah.
I just feel like that we would learn more about Kira in that case. And it would also explain some of her actions at times.
Right.
But we don't get that, which is too bad.
Well, we also hinted earlier how she initially was impressed with the religious devotion of Vedic Wynn.
Yes, because she seemed to not have any doubts.
Yeah.
And she followed her convictions all the time. Although I think she saw some of the dangers of that at that point as well.
Oh, well, she did a 180 on that one when she actually experienced what Wynn was like.
Yes, a dangerous person.
Yeah. I also think he might be picking on her here. One of the things he definitely was.
It was flirtatious.
Yeah. And one of the things they hinted at when they first met, when they got off the shuttle, is how there's sort of an uncomfortableness. They almost don't know how to, if you like, express their interest in the other person. And they make it difficult. And I thought this was a nice little touch of putting a twist on that.
I think it's the robes.
Ah.
I would find dating someone in monk robes very challenging.
And the fact Kira likes to shoot things.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, you wouldn't want to upset Kira or annoy her. She might shoot you.
Oh. Okay. You're saying Kira is scary to date because she has a trigger temper and also a trigger.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I wasn't following. I gotcha. Well, Beryl does propose that they talk about something else, and he lists off some lighthearted topics. And ultimately, they decide to play something called Spring Ball, and they head off to do that. And I hope he brought some other clothes because playing sports in those robes is going to be tricky.
Yeah, and sweaty.
We never actually see what Spring Ball is here. Yeah. I don't know if it's supposed to be basketball or a version of racquetball. I don't know.
Something Bajoran.
Back to the Mysterious Valley, and Odo is talking to the old guy whose daughter is missing, old guy number two. He was one of the founders of the colony, but Odo is wondering why he doesn't seem very interested in finding his daughter. He says there's nothing he can do about it, and Odo then asks if he's all right, and the guy admits that he's quite ill, and he does wish he could see his daughter again before he dies. Before he leaves, Odo asks why no one ever leaves the village, and he says there's no other place to go. It's like the Truman Show or something. Odo is very confused by this.
No, they found all the full works of Alexis, and they are following her teachings.
Oh, Lord. Like there's no reason to go anywhere. Yeah. Odo is very confused why no one even thinks of searching outside of the village for the missing people. And the old guy says he guarantees there are no missing people out there, which is very suspicious.
Oh, yes. He buried them in the crawl space under his house.
Maybe. Dax and Odo are now following Taya around some very dry hills. They need some rain wherever they film that.
Yeah.
And she is babbling about something.
A backlot somewhere over in Burbank, probably?
Maybe. She keeps trying to convince Odo to prove he's a changeling, but he doesn't. We don't have that much budget, kid. It's going to be a one-shot deal when he does it.
And I like the way she's telling him stories as well.
Yes, she's really talking. She takes him to the edge of the village, saying this is as far as she's ever gone. Dax and Odo wander a little bit farther and discover that the protector scanning device completely disappears. And then Taya gets a little too close to the edge and her arm starts to disappear. So somebody is running an elaborate program.
Oh, yeah. That was like, okay, that's the giveaway.
After the ad break, we're back in the little village and Dax is messing with the reactor. She does a little demonstration for the protector making his cloak disappear and then reappear, and she tells him that it's a holographic projector and everyone is just a hologram.
Big reveal.
Yeah, I thought it was surprising that she just told them that. The component controlling the particle field is breaking down, and that's why people are disappearing. And the guy says, this is ridiculous. And also he keeps saying hologram. He doesn't think he's a hologram. Then they say that they can show him proof by taking him to the edge of the particle field.
When Dax is delivering this, she has a very serious look on her face. You don't
She's
usually see that with Dax.
Well, it's a science problem.
Yeah.
She gets very serious when it's a science problem. We are back on the station again.
And we get to see the docking ring with a different ship docked at the upper pylon. I got to admit, I do want to see more of the ships. They do great ships on
this
show.
Whose ship was that? Was that the ship Beryl came on?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
it might have just been a generic one. There's another one later on, different one.
Yes. Well, Kira and Beryl are having a flirty snack after playing spring ball, and she is wearing a ridiculous headband like she's Roger Federer.
Oh, really? I looked at that and thought Beryl was going to say to her, Kira, the 80s are over. Stop wearing the Jane Fonda vintage workout outfit.
She's doing some kind of jazzercise or something in the 90s. But that's not the kind of headband it was. This was a Roger Federer tie in the back.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, anyway, he looks so funny in his little workout outfit as well because we're so used to seeing him in his orange robes.
Yeah.
But as they clear the dinner table, they bump into each other and start making out, which was very funny, very TV. But they can't stop talking while they're kissing. And as they talk about the gambling debt of the person who invited Beryl to the station, Kira suddenly realizes that Quark is involved.
That was great.
And it's a setup to distract her. And it worked because she's been distracted.
Yep.
And she runs off very suddenly, leaving Mr. Feather-haired guy dazed and confused.
So what was her reaction when he said he was at the Rilaketh camp? If you noticed,
that was a funny look.
Yeah.
They both kind of looked at each other. I wondered, too, what that meant. Like she said she was at some refugee camp.
Yeah.
Was it a refugee camp?
That's correct.
So she said she was at some kind of a camp and then he said he was at some other camp and then they kind of paused and looked at each other.
Yeah.
And they didn't really explain it. And I wonder if that was just a moment of, that was a thing we both suffered through and they just kind of moved on.
They both know the bad sides of being there. Or I was wondering, was the Rilaketh camp, was that a particularly bad one? And she was sort of maybe shocked of like, you survived that? Or, you know, you became a Vedic after that?
But I would think if it really meant something, they would have talked about it a bit more. To me, it was maybe just another thing they had in common, another connection they had.
A bonding piece if they both know what it was like to be in one of those camps. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another thing I thought was funny in this scene was Prilar Rit, how he had a gambling problem. And Beryl is saying about how he's being recalled to Bajor and it's quite a scandal. That I thought was pretty funny.
That was the guy that Quark had him do the favor of inviting Beryl.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has no real meaning in this episode, and we never even see who he is, so I just sort of glossed over him. But yeah, that was the story that got them here, got Beryl here.
Yeah. Oh, did you notice when Kira leaves, her outfit is even weirder? It actually has like a little knee-length skirt thing.
Which, at first I wrote down, what kind of sport are you playing in a skirt? And then I realized, well, they do wear skirts to play tennis. Yeah. But they're never that long.
Right.
This was too long to really be able to run in. Yeah, it was it was not a good... Yeah, it was wrong. It was all wrong. From the headband to the skirt.
I think our roles are reversed one. I'm noticing the haircuts and the outfits. And that's normally your area of
I noticed the outfit. I noticed the outfit. I did not notice the hair. I completely noticed the outfit. But like I said, I wrote down, what sport are you playing a skirt? And then I was like, oh yeah, tennis, which I think is dumb. I don't think people should have to wear skirts to play tennis. Just wear shorts. What's the big deal? That's a whole other topic.
That's for your tennis podcast.
Oh, I'd love to be on a tennis podcast.
Yes, you would.
We go back down to the planet and everyone is sort of yelling at the Protector. They've all seen what happens at the edge of the field, and the Protector is telling them that if they shut down the machine, the missing people just might come back, but there's also a chance they'll all disappear for good. Dax says that's going to happen in a few months anyway because the machine is failing. So they agree to the reboot and upgrade by Dax.
I really like how Dax is prepared to help them at this point. Even though they're holograms, she's still prepared to help them resolve their problem. I mean, it's so funny. It's so Star Trek. If she has empathy with these beings who aren't, you know, by their standards, actually real.
That's true. She has no way of knowing which ones of them are real, if any.
Yeah.
Because she said her tricorder doesn't work.
Right.
And their scanner is certainly not going to show
that. Oh, yeah, it's going to show them all as real. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
But I also think it's a science problem and she wants to fix a science problem.
Oh, that, yes. Of course, there is that.
Well, before she presses the button to do the reboot, Taya tells Odo his face isn't so scary once you get used to it, which Odo seems to like. So Dax does her reboot and everything disappears except for the reactor. Oh yeah, and of course, the oldest guy, guy number two.
Taya's grandfather.
Not a shocker. He says the Dominion took over his homeworld and changed their whole way of life. So he left that planet and recreated everything he lost. And he's lived here for nearly 30 years. He asks to be taken back to his original planet. But Odo is like, but what about Taya? Which... that was awesome.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was like such a great moment.
I mean, Odo is very logical here, though.
The old guy says she's not real, and Odo says, who's to say our definition of life is the only valid one? Her memories exist. If you asked her, she'd say she was real. And the guy is like, but it's all an illusion. And Odo says, you created the village 30 years ago, and Taya is only 10, so you had nothing to do with her creation, just like a real child. They ask why he cared about the child, even though she's a hologram, and he says, because he loves her. So Odo says, see? She's real to you. She's real to me. They're all real.
Yeah.
Don't turn your back on them now.
Odo is very logical here. I mean, these holograms, they think they're real. They demonstrate an independent level of thinking and behavior. It's funny because Voyager expands upon this in a few years with the Doctor becoming, you know, truly a sentient being. And we're seeing the same kind of thing here. I mean, we've seen it on The Next Generation with Moriarty. And I like the way there's sort of this...
in a bad way.
Yeah, in a bad way. And I like the way we're seeing this sort of progression here of the holograms becoming self-aware or becoming AIs in their own right.
Yes. It's very interesting. I like the way he just said, that's not a thing you created, the kid.
Yeah.
The kid was sort of created within the program, and we can't define if that's life or not life. I don't know. We've certainly had a lot of conversations about sentience from holograms. So this was a little different.
Yeah. And it's interesting stepping back because we've had Voyager, obviously, where it was a hologram was a major character.
True. And that is later.
Yeah.
Back on the station, Jake comes home from working with Chief O'Brien and manages to tell his dad that he doesn't want to join Starfleet.
Oh, this was a very conflicted Jake.
Yeah. He says Starfleet is too much like his dad and he needs to find something more like him. And because Sisko is the greatest dad in the history of Star Trek and TV in general,
yes.
He says, it's your life, Jake. You have to choose your own way. There's only one thing I want for you. That's for you to find something you love and to do it the best that you can. And Jake heads off to study, happy that he finally told his dad the truth.
I will say, Jake's awfully smart for a 15-year-old.
Oh my gosh, these two.
I guess they're smarter in the future or something.
Yeah, well, that is what we're supposed to believe.
Sisko as well, at the same time, is such a great positive father figure. I mean,
he's the greatest.
Both understanding and supportive of the son. And he understands what Jake is really telling him. It's a very idealized relationship, but that's supposed to be a part of Star Trek.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's really nice to see.
Oh, I know. These two, they just break your heart.
Yes.
They're just too amazing. Well, now we go to Quark's and Kira arrives back in full uniform. She's given up the tennis skirt and the headband.
I'd like to ask, where is Morn? I have been searching for Morn and I have not seen him for several episodes and he was not in the bar.
Yeah.
I hope he's okay.
I think he'll be back. So Kira tells Quark she thought he'd like to know they caught his cousin trying to slip back onto the station again. And guess what? This time they managed to confiscate the stolen stuff from the museum. Then she thanks him for inviting Brile on the station, saying she found him very diverting. And she heads off arm in arm with Brile. And Quark says, not diverting enough.
Oh, his little plan completely failed.
It almost worked.
Oh, and when Kira walks away, that swagger.
She's got that straight back walk again.
Yeah. It's like she should be a Starfleet captain with that kind of swagger. It's just priceless.
100%. Yeah.
She's in command. She's in her element.
It's a little like Anson Mount and Pike on Discovery.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Dax is ready to turn the reactor back on. The old guy asks that they don't reveal he's not a hologram to the others, and they agree. She hits the button and everything comes back, even Taya's mom, which makes Odo very happy.
Yes.
The protector says, we'll just have to get used to being holograms.
Hologram.
Which is my favorite line. Yes, you will. Then he wonders who created them. And Odo says, well, whoever it was, they did a fine job.
Aw.
Something has actually touched his cold, non-existent heart.
Yes.
And Taya tells Odo her mother is back and then says that she'll miss him. And Odo says he'll miss her too. She thanks him and says she hopes he finds his parents as well, which is so sweet.
Yeah.
He says, thank you, so do I. And then he heads off to leave with Dax, but before he goes, he owes her a changeling episode. He twirls around and turns himself into a colorful spinning top, and Taya claps in delight, and then they beam away. It was very cute.
That was a very nice touch.
The end.
A good ending.
A very nice ending. All right, so what is your over-analysis of this episode?
Oh, yes. There's lots of stuff to talk about here. I think I will start with, I'm amazed Quark actually was able to do some strategic planning for a change.
Failed.
It failed.
But he tried.
Yeah. He leveraged a gambling debt to bring Vedic Brile onto the station to distract Kira while Odo is away. I mean, that's surprisingly smart for Quark.
Yeah.
It failed, which is typical of Quark, but it's the first time I think we've seen him thinking this far ahead.
Yeah, I waffle a little bit between it was kind of a narrow-minded view to think that just bringing a boy on board to distract the girl was going to be enough for him to get away with something. I waffle between it's like, well, that is maybe the way that a Ferengi would see it.
Yeah.
Because they don't necessarily understand women.
Well, Ferengi are totally distracted by a pretty face. Look how stupid Quark is.
Exactly. But I waffled between that and, well, it almost worked. And I have to say, if it had worked, I would have really complained about it in the Women in the Future section. But fortunately, it failed.
So how do you think he came by this information that Kira was interested in Brile? Do you think there are rumors about it?
I'm guessing there's rumors.
Yeah.
People tell him things in the bar, right? He's always trying to pull info out.
Yeah.
You know who probably told him was probably Morn. He seems like a gossip.
Morn heard from the Vedic.
Who's the biggest gossip?
Dax. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Dax may have told him.
That's true. He does talk to Dax.
Maybe that's why they had that at the beginning.
Yeah.
To show that she is a gossip. So maybe while she was gossiping, that info got to Quark.
I think you're right. I think that is exactly it.
Yeah.
Excellent deduction there.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, the next thing. The old guy says he is from Yadera Prime and complains how the Dominion changed their way of life.
Yeah.
But we don't learn exactly what that means.
No, we don't.
Did they have some kind of really regressive societal norms that were overall negative? I was thinking to myself, oh, the Dominion took away our slaves. It was terrible. Like, they forced equality on us. The Skria enjoyed being farmers.
Well, we don't really know.
Yeah.
There's no explanation for what actually had happened or what's it like on that planet that he came from. You have to make a leap on your own.
I mean, I wonder if it was just that the guy didn't like change.
That's entirely possible.
Because we never learned whether it was good or bad change.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, from the Skria's perspective, when the Dominion turned up and basically freed them, that was probably a net positive.
Well, they didn't say that the Dominion turned up and freed them. What they said was they were able to escape when the Dominion conquered whoever those other people were who were enslaving them.
Oh. I took that as a more positive, but that's true.
She used the word escape. I just listened to that podcast this morning.
Yeah. Okay. I will accept that. So, yeah, we don't learn a lot about him.
No. I wish we had learned more. It would have been nice to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm taking his society was negative and the Dominion actually did something positive.
Okay. Fair enough.
Taya is so cute.
She's adorable.
Absolutely. The character and the actress did a great job at just, you know, making that little girl seem so real. And I thought the relationship with Odo was so well done there.
It was.
It gave him a little bit more humanity. I think it's building on this, giving him an appreciation of human emotions, which at the start, it showed him sort of struggling with it and having that, oh, I don't understand these strange human rules of attraction and liking people and things like that.
Yep.
But with Taya, it was showing how there was sort of this innocent friendship.
Right.
She could be nice to him for no other reason than she was just a nice little girl.
Right.
And it wasn't that she wanted to see him do tricks or whatever. And he returned sort of the favor, as it were, by doing a trick for her.
Showing a trick, yeah.
Yeah, and he did that trick of turning into the spinning top was important because he did it by his own choice because he liked the little girl.
Right.
I thought that was expanding Odo's character in his just ability to understand humanity.
Well, I think they were making a point of when he told his same old sad story that we've heard before, that they weren't really his friends, the people who wanted him to turn into things like a chair. He always says he turned into a chair, which is like, really? That's the most interesting thing you could do? But anyway, I think at some point in this episode, he started to feel like she was actually able to care about him without that.
Right.
And she didn't even necessarily believe that he was a changeling until the very end.
Yeah.
And when she said, I hope you find your parents, I think that was the turning point where he was just like, oh man.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
That was good. It was very cute.
I did like that one. And possibly finally.
Mm-hmm.
So Quark's cousin stole some artifacts from Cardassia 5.
Mm.
Why would the Bajorans really care about somebody stealing stuff from Cardassia? I mean, the Cardassians are awful. I mean, they stole lots of stuff from Bajor that we know of. They stole all but one of their orbs.
I'll tell you why they care.
Why's that?
They don't want anyone trafficking stolen Cardassian goods in Bajoran space because that is going to expose them to the risk of retaliation from the Cardassians.
Excellent point.
I'm all over this episode today.
Oh, you really are.
Hey, when we record early in the day, I have way more brain power.
I was wondering if these artifacts might have actually been Bajoran in the first place.
Well, there is that possibility. I thought about that too. Like how the Nazis stole all of the
artwork, treasures, all sorts of things. Yeah.
That's a possibility. So maybe that's why they were interested in it.
Yeah. Well, it would be great. They got them back basically for free.
Right.
Finally, although we've kind of talked about this, Star Trek really does have a love of its holograms.
Oh, yes, it does.
I'm guessing because this is an alien technology, even though Dax could understand it,
yep,
perhaps the AI in this version of the holographic generator is much more advanced. So you ended up with these people who were fully independent from the programming and did exceed what was originally programmed into them.
Right.
I just kind of like it because this is a step towards the Doctor in Voyager.
Right. It is.
Who is one of my favorite characters.
Is that it for your overanalysis?
I think that wraps it up.
Well, in my overanalysis notes, I did write down that I was happy we had a B story. Not a big one, but still. Actually, we had a B and a C with Jake as well.
Yeah.
But we kind of needed it because the main story with the holograms, it wasn't too deep. So
yeah.
They needed another thing going on. Although, like I said last week, Sanctuary could have absolutely benefited from a B story because that episode was quite shallow as well. That was on a different level. The topic of that story, that refugees looking for a home, that's a serious, dramatic story.
Yeah.
But they didn't tell a serious, dramatic story. They told a light, shallow story. So they could have either gone deeper and darker, like we said last week, or added a B story, but I was happy we had a B story here.
It was nice to have a B story.
This did remind me of the Next Gen episode, The Survivors. Did you see that one?
I don't remember it offhand.
It starred Anne Haney. She appeared in the season one episode Dax, where she was the arbitrator.
Oh.
Do you remember
her?
She was in that episode, and her husband had, he didn't create holograms exactly, but he created a whole little world, including his wife, because they'd all died. And he brought her back in a physical way. It reminded me of that story, but that story was a bit more tragic.
Yeah.
But still, Starfleet shattering some illusions because Dax did tell all of them that they were holograms.
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 Yes.
This story had a much happier ending as they decided, you know, evolved holograms or life and blah, blah, blah. That did not happen in the other story.
Yeah, I did
but
like
it also
this.
Reminded me of the Truman Show when...
Oh, yes.
It's like, this is our world and we have no reason to go anywhere else.
This is really good beer.
Oh my gosh. The advertising.
I love the Truman Show. You know my opinion on that one. It is the network of the 90s.
Yes. They also left some things dangling that was a little disappointing. Like, why did Odo go along on this trip? They never explained it. And what about Bashir spying on Quark? I mean, that could have been fun. So they left some loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if there is something left on a cutting room floor of
potential.
A Bashir scene with him trying to spy on Quark.
Yeah.
If you had the time, that could actually be a funny comedic element in there. Of Bashir just really not being able to do it and Quark actually trolling him.
Yes. Well, if we go to women in the future, Kira gets a boyfriend and catches Quark.
Yep.
I'm not sure she needs a boyfriend, but he does at least seem to like and respect her, so I'll allow it.
He has a job too.
He does have a job. That's true. I also appreciate that Dax was just doing her job. Although Dax as a gossip is a little annoying, but I do think that's just a character trait that they keep playing on. So I think I'll allow that too, because she did talk about how stuff that's not personal is boring after seven lifetimes. So I guess it makes sense that she would be digging a little bit deeper. In reality, I feel like the opposite would be true.
Really?
Like you would maybe have less and less interest in the intricacies of human and humanoid, I guess, relationships.
Yeah.
And you would have vast interest in many other things, like maybe anthropologically or something, you know, at a higher level.
Yeah. Oh, at more of a scientific level of analysis of
exactly
the rituals of organic coupling.
Exactly.
As Odo might describe it.
As it's exactly how he would describe
it. Yeah. That's a good point. But also, I think Dax is a younger individual now. So, you know, maybe that side of her is influencing the Dax symbiont.
Right. Yeah, that could be.
So sort of Jadzia likes the soap opera-y aspects, and that's
right.
What's coming out here.
Well, but if that's the case, then it's like, okay, well, then we are maybe doing something because she's female, like making her interested in gossip, which...
That is a more negative interpretation. Yeah,
it is a more negative interpretation. And I have to tell you, I work with a lot of male gossips or have worked with a lot of male gossips in my lifetime. So that is not a distinct female trait.
Oh, some of the biggest gossips I've known were the guys. in the companies
Absolutely.
I've worked at.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's actually pretty funny. Outside of HR, it was usually guys you wanted to talk to.
To get the dirt.
To get the dirt, yeah.
I think the only other thing I would say here in this category is there's a disappointing lack of female characters in the hologram world. I'm going to say hologram now yeah. instead of hologram all the time. But there were no female characters. There were these two old white guys. One of those two characters could have been a woman.
Well, maybe the developer could only do white guys. I can only do old white guys. You know, the village is pretty much going to be full of them.
It was a very white valley of people, which also might explain what he was saying when they ruined his perfect little world on the other planet.
Oh, that's brutal.
Well, we don't know. We didn't get enough info.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate to condemn people when I don't have info, so I don't know. That's a read. But would have liked to have seen another female character is all yeah. I'm saying, apart from just the little girl. But the little girl was amazing.
Yeah, just adorable.
Okay, that is all I have. How about rating? Thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs neutral?
I'm going thumbs up. It was a very enjoyable Star Trek episode. You had three individual little plots going on. You advanced the characters. It was overall very enjoyable. Great episode.
I don't think it was a great episode, but I also give it a thumbs up. I found it quite enjoyable. I feel like I've already explained the things that I yeah. like, so I don't want to repeat, but I liked it. I'll give it a thumbs up. It's even one I would say when we talk about rewatchability. I think it's got some rewatchability.
Yes.
I'd probably watch it again.
Oh, yeah. Having rewatched it, yeah, I would agree.
Yes, you've already done that. Okay, well, that is it for Season 2, Episode 16. Come back next week for Episode 17.
And I don't think I'll have any more Miles conspiracy theories.
You're out?
Yeah.
You're done?
Yeah, from this one, yeah.
Good. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.